My name is Jessica Prechtel. I'm 36 years old. Today is August 17, 2019. I'm speaking with Ava Steffens, who is my mother, and we are recording this interview in Irvine, California. So my first question, Mom, is can you tell me about someone who had a big influence on your life? And would you tell me about some of the most important lessons that person taught you?
Wow. There's a lot of people that had big influences on my life, but I guess I'll talk about my mom, Lulu, who was born, she was raised Lulu L'Italien. Later on in life, she learned that that was actually an adopted name, but she was French-Canadian. And she had a big influence on my life as a mom. I was the oldest of six kids, and she we grew up in a Cuban home, really. My dad was Cuban, my mom French-Canadian, but the extended family all lived on the same block, and so my mom was... really stood out in our family dynamics, the extended family dynamics, because she spoke French, she spoke English, she spoke Spanish, and her favorite saying was, everything works out for good. No matter what happens, it always turns out for good. So always look for the silver lining in everything. And that was something that I always remember about her. And she loved to laugh and loved to, she loved people. She wasn't a great fan of kids except for her own kids and her own grandkids. So it was kind of funny, but she ended up having six kids and a bunch of grandkids. So she was just a very fun person.
Yeah. And where did you grow up?
I grew up in a suburb of Miami called Hialeah, Florida. And it was, there were a lot of Cuban refugees growing up in Miami at that time because it was right after I was born December 30th, 1955. And so shortly after, I lived in Cuba for a bit after I was born, even though I was born in Miami. And then at that time, you could go back and forth from Miami to Havana really easily. And then there was the revolution in 59. And so that's when all of our family, extended family, moved permanently to Miami, and we landed in Hialeah, Florida. Yeah. How about you? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Newport Beach, California. With my mom and my dad and my sister, Caitlin.
And who had a big influence in your life?
Probably you.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, you don't have to say your mom, just because I said my mom. Why do you say that?
Why you? Just because you've always had really strong values, and I think that you've passed those down to me. And, yeah, knowing how to care about other people, and, yeah.
Aw, thanks. I'm going to try not to cry. That's sweet. Thank you.
So tell me more, like, what your parents were like growing up and when you were a kid. What was it like? What was your relationship like with your parents? And did you get into any trouble?
Oh, boy. Okay. I tried to not ever tell you about all the times I got in trouble growing up because I didn't want to give you any ideas when you were growing up of ways to get in trouble.
Well, we're beyond that now.
But now you're an adult, so we can talk freely. But no, we had a very fun family. I have to say that I had a lot of beautiful community around me. I felt very protected and very safe growing up because we had one home we lived in one home, of course, you know, my parents and six kids, and I was the oldest, and we were all girls until the twins were born, and actually today is their birthday. Happy birthday to Oscar and Lucy, who were better known as Tuto and Ala growing up, and they're 55 years old today, I believe.
Wow.
So that's pretty exciting. So when they were born, we finally had our boy in our family, so my mom could finally tie her tubes, because that was the whole thing, is, you know, have a boy. So it's very, you know, very Latino culture that they value boys. So we won't get into that, but... we just were very close-knit family, but not just close-knit amongst ourselves, but the other four family homes across the street on the same block of my grandparents and my great-aunt, Tia Angelita, and they all lived in that home with Fidelina and her kids, and then next to them, Tia Melita, Tio Miguel, Miriam, and Mirtha, and then down the street, my other great aunts and cousins. There were two houses there, so we just really had a wonderful upbringing of lots of family, lots of Cuban culture, lots of wonderful food, wonderful music, dancing. Every time there was a birthday, there was a big celebration. It didn't matter, you know, if it was a one-year-old, everybody came together and celebrated and played music and danced just had a great time. And so that's the upbringing I had, and it was wonderful.
You've told me stories before about your mom, like, dancing all the time around the house.
And... yeah, my mom used to play Tom Jones and Engelbert Humperdinck and Edie Gourmet and Los Trios Panchos and El Trio Pancho and lots of music, always, you know. And then as I was growing up, we started playing Aretha Franklin and the Supremes, and we used to have shows, you know, on the street, and we would make up our little tickets, and all the cousins would perform, and our poor aunts and uncles would all have to buy tickets, and we'd set up the chairs, and they'd have to sit there and watch us perform, you know, and sing and dance, and there was always dancing and music.
Did you have any boy cousins?
That's a good question. We had like extended cousins that
like
were boy
cousins.
like Paquito but not a lot. It was mostly girls
it
in our family.
Like it's a lot of girls.
Yep, and it has continued, hasn't it?
Yes.
You have a sister, Caitlin,
mm-hmm.
and the two of you have. You have. Tell me about your daughter and.
I have a daughter. She's four. Her name's Pilar. And, yeah, she's a girl.
Yeah.
And my sister, Caitlin, has two girls as well.
Yeah.
It's funny because it seems like most of my friends have boys, and I keep hearing about lots of boys being born, but that hasn't... I've always been surrounded by girls.
Mm-hmm. I love my girls.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. Selah and Shiloh, too. So, yeah.
How would you describe yourself as a child? What were you like?
Oh, boy. Well, I used to, I was pretty independent. Maybe because as the firstborn, I had my own ideas of how things should be and I remember my siblings always trying to pull me in to play with them and such. And I would always try to find my own space, you know, which was not an easy thing to do in a 3-bedroom house with six kids and our parents. And eventually we did build an addition to the house. So we added a bedroom and a bathroom, but so anyway, I was always trying to find my own corner of privacy, but it wasn't easy. So, So anyway, yeah, I remember being more of an observer of the rest of the kids, and other than with my older cousins and my sister that follows me, Laura, and my cousins Mirtha and Miriam, the four of us used to spend a lot of time together. Again, listening to music and dancing, and playing games like hopscotch and jacks and things like that, you know. But I remember growing up when I started growing up, when I became a teenager is when I started getting more into trouble. I got a car when I was, how old was I? 16 or 17. And
what kind of car was it?
An MG Midget. It was a lot of fun.
What color was it?
It was beige, a convertible.
Wow.
And it was a tiny car, and I just had way too much fun, and we used to pack it. I mean, it hardly had a back seat, but I regularly had at least four people in that car.
Wow.
And we used to go down to the beach and get in all kinds of trouble. I remember one time being on the causeway going down to the beach, and somehow I don't know what I did, but I ended up with each side of the car on two different sides of the median strip. And police officers had to pull up and actually help me move the car off of the median strip. And
you could lift it off?
Yeah, it was a tiny car, and they managed to help me get it off of there. And I didn't have to get a tow truck. And
wow.
I don't know how, but I didn't get a lot of tickets. I always got a lot of warnings.
You never got arrested?
I never got arrested. I managed to not get arrested. I had friends that did, but I managed to always sweet talk my way out of. Yeah, in those days, you could get away with a lot more.
Yeah.
Than you can get away with these days. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More innocent times.
I think so.
Did you have any nicknames as a kid or as a teen?
Well, yeah. They call me Flaca, if you can believe it, which means skinny. So, yeah, that's funny.
Did you like that nickname, or did you feel self-conscious about it?
I felt very self-conscious. So it's kind of strange, because even though I'm far from being Flaca anymore, I still have that self-image, you know, of being tall and lanky and, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you?
Nicknames?
Did you have nicknames? I'm trying to remember.
We used to, so with my four friends in fifth grade, we met and we were friends for a long time. We called ourselves the Fearsome Foursome. Our favorite movie was Stand By Me.
That's right.
And there were four boys in that movie. So we each identified with one of the boys. So my nickname that nobody actually called me, but I would sign like notes to my friends, was Gordy, which was one of the characters in Stand By Me. It's not a nickname that anybody used, but it was just a funny nickname that we would... Each of us were one of the four boys in the movie.
That's neat.
Yeah.
So talk to me about your friends and what you all used to do together and how you had fun.
Yeah, I mean, so we met in fifth grade, and we had more than just the four of us, but for some reason, like, the four of us were a tighter group, but we weren't necessarily, like, exclusive of other people. I think we were just, like, a little bit of, I don't know the adjectives to use. Maybe like, we like to have fun, but not, I don't know. We weren't like the cool kids. So maybe like a little bit nerdy or geeky. Like we liked reading. We loved like movies and we liked trick-or-treating past the time when trick-or-treating's still a cool thing to do. So, we had good friendship. We'd go to the beach. It was just like a safe group of friends, you know, mm-hmm. where you don't feel like self-conscious or trying to be somebody you're not. And we're still friends now. So it's really, even though we live a little bit further from each other, we've still managed to all stay in Southern California and get together for the big stuff. And yeah,
that's
so
great.
It's nice.
Where did you go to school? Where did you meet? What school?
Oh, Newport Elementary on the beach. So it was nice. I loved that school. I wish I could take my daughter to that school. It was really cool. It was right on the Balboa Peninsula, and so the playground was like the beach, and we could see dolphins during recess, and it was really cool. And they had a really fun theater program, which I got super into, performing in musicals, and they had really good teachers. I feel like everybody knew who you were, you know, it was like mm-hmm. a smaller school environment. And yeah, it just felt like a really good, fun place where everybody knows you and there's lots of things, fun things to do. I remember doing the Girl Scouts and, you know, you're just like with all the girls from your class too, you know, mm-hmm. like everybody kind of did everything. It yeah. seemed.
Yeah.
It was a neat community.
I'll never forget the day you were in fifth grade and you came home and you said, "Mom, I tried out for Annie." And I said, "That's fantastic." And I was like so proud of you that you had actually gone and auditioned for a play. You know, because you weren't like super outgoing. You were more reserved as a kid, and but you had a beautiful voice, and I said, "So, you know, I was hoping that you got a part." I said, "Did you get a part?" I didn't realize that, you know, kids pretty much get something, right? Some part. And you said, "Yeah." And I said, "What part did you get?" And you said, "Annie." And I went, "What?" I just remember that day. It was so cool. How did that feel for you? And
I don't remember. Like, I think I remember the audition, but I don't remember too much of that particular conversation. I mean, I loved musicals and singing, and I still love the songs from Annie.
Yeah.
It was really fun. I loved like all the rehearsals and just kind of immersing yourself in a story and like kind of being obsessed with something for 4 months or however long we're learning it from auditions to performing. It's just funny because I don't know, like I have so much fun doing it and I don't know how much fun it is for people to like watch it, you know? I'm like trying to think now because I'm enrolling Pilar in some dance classes
mm-hmm.
and I'm getting really excited like for her to perform. And then it's like, wait, is it actually as cool as it is to watch somebody perform as it is to perform yourself? So I'm hoping it is because I hope there's lots of future for her in performing as well because I loved it myself. But yeah, I don't know what it's like to be like the parent watching kids perform.
Well, I can only speak for myself, but I can tell you it was delightful. I had a great time watching you perform, and so that was only the first of many more. So talk about that a little bit in your experience with theater.
Yeah, so I ended up doing more musical theater, I think, all through the rest of elementary school and then middle school and high school. And then in high school, I got involved with, like, the community theater as well as my school theater. So that was kind of fun, being with adults who were also doing it, which now it's funny, like, as an adult, trying to think about going into community theater and what that would be like. I don't know.
You've never really done it as an adult,
I stopped
have you?
I stopped after high school.
And why is that?
It seemed like people were going on, like, two tracks of, I'm going to make this my career and have, like, more successes in it versus, I don't know any, I mean, maybe I knew a couple people that did it casually in college, but I think that most, and I did have friends that were successful in their theater career post high school and post college, and they have made a career out of it. But for me, I just felt like it was a decision where you're either going to do this as a career or move on with your life. So it is something that, I don't know, I'd be open to getting back into it. I haven't gone to any community theater performances, so I don't know. Mm-hmm. Am I just, like, remembering it as this amazing thing, and in reality it's kind of, like, mediocre? Or
right.
Is it still really fun and cool? And yeah.
Well, I was always amazed at how long those rehearsals, especially as the date would get closer.
Yeah.
How many hours and what an investment of time and effort it is. And
Can you imagine, like, or it's hard for me to imagine at this age and with all the responsibilities I have, being in a theater, like, rehearsing from 3 to 11.
Right.
You know, every day for weeks.
It's like another full-time job.
I think that would be insane, but it could be fun. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Something to think about.
But, yeah, that's great.
Yeah. What did you think your life would be like when you were older? So when you were a kid and you thought about getting older, did you have any, like, dream jobs or things you wanted to do?
Well, I know one of the things was as kids, we always struggled financially. You know, I didn't feel poor, but as I got older, I did know that there were, you know, financial struggles. And from the time I was 12 years old, I always had a heart for justice. So from the time I was 12 years old, I wanted to be a lawyer. And so those two things put together, yeah, the desire not to struggle financially and the desire to be someone who advocated for justice, really had me on a path towards law school from a very young age. So I saw myself as a professional, saw myself, again, independent, and not, being able to buy whatever I wanted and that kind of thing. That to me was like the epitome of success, and I wanted to be successful, I guess. It was a big word around my house, mostly from, you know, as Cuban immigrants in Miami, there was a lot of success stories and a lot of struggling for success, as so many families that were growing up alongside us were trying to rebuild their lives after, you know, everything being really uprooted, mm-hmm. and replanting and rebuilding. And so, yeah, so I really wanted that as a child.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Did your dad ever talk about, like, what he had back in Cuba and what they lost? Mm-hmm. Was that, like, a recurring story that you heard?
They didn't talk that much about it, but I would overhear. It wasn't like they would talk to us about mm-hmm. it, but overhearing stories and overhearing, like, you know, they had, it sounded as though they were upper middle class. I believe my grandfather had an advertising agency in Havana, and so they grew up very comfortable, I believe. My dad went to, both my dad and his sister went to private school. She was a kindergarten teacher, I believe, and he was a baseball player. And then went to boarding school in Kentucky. So I suppose they must have had means in order to send their son to boarding school in Kentucky and that kind of thing. So,
wow.
Mm-hmm.
Is that when he learned English? Or
He must have, yes. But I also think there was, because of the free trade and free travel back and forth of people, I think that a lot of people in Cuba spoke English, I believe, at least at that, you know, people that were in the city like they were and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I get the impression that Cuba was had a big, like, tourism industry.
They definitely did. So I know that my dad worked at, like, a casino as he got older. And that was, you know, very typical tourism spot. A lot of people, would come to Cuba. I mean, they'd come for the weekend. It's very close. So back and forth, people would travel. Uh-huh.
Was there a story about Grandma Lulu being a singer?
Oh, so this is something I just learned a couple of years ago when I went back to check out where she was from in Saint-Anne-de-Mont in Quebec, which is a very, very small village on the St. Lawrence River. And so almost 2 years ago, my youngest sister, Lucy, and I traveled by car from Detroit to Saint-Anne-de-Mont and met some of my mom's distant cousins and found out a little bit more about her. And one of the stories that they shared was how when she left home when she was very young, she was like 16, and she had always talked about leaving Canada and coming to New York first, and that's where she went first. But what I didn't realize is that in between those, in between leaving Saint-Anne-de-Mont and getting to New York, she actually went and lived in Montreal for a while and was a jazz singer there. And so, which made a lot of sense in retrospect, because she always loved to sing and had a beautiful voice. My sister Amelia also sings a lot and has a very beautiful voice and a lot of jazz music. So learning that, and of course, I've always loved jazz. So putting those things together made a lot of sense, learning that. It was very cool. Yeah.
And how did your parents meet? Do you know that story?
My dad actually told me a little bit more about that story recently, and I guess she used to work at a 5 and 10 is what we used to call, like, the Walgreens in
like
those,
a pharmacy?
No. Yeah, it's
or like a corner market?
It's like a pharmacy, but it also has like a diner. You know, you have a counter where you serve meals and milkshakes and ice cream.
Okay.
and you know, like, is Watson's.
That, yeah, I was gonna say Watson's.
Yeah, kind of like Watson's. Okay. in the Orange Circle there. But that was very typical. Almost every downtown had, you know, what we called 5 and 10s. And so she worked at the counter.
Miami?
Miami, downtown. Okay. Miami. And my dad, during the off season, he told me he had this coin store, so, you know, where people would come and I guess, like, collect coins and that kind of thing. So his colleague or friend one day came by and said, "Hey, have you seen the gal working over at the 5 and 10? And so my dad, of course, went to go check her out, and it was my mom. And that's how they met. And the legend has it that she was engaged at the time to someone else.
Oh, my goodness.
And he invited her to come to spring training with him. And she said she'd go if he married her, because she was tired of, she'd been with this other guy for years and he wouldn't marry her. And so he said, "Sure, I'll marry you." So they went, and they ended up, he was in Brownsville, Texas, and they ended up going across the border to Ciudad Juarez and getting married there. So that's, and then 9 months later, I was born.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
That is quite a story.
Uh-huh. I know.
Why do you think they got married in Mexico and not in Texas?
Later on, I found out that my dad was actually, had been married before.
Oh, wow.
One day I was in my grandparents' home, and I was in the spare room, and I was like, you know, like kids do, looking around and seeing what I could find. I found some old pictures, and there was a picture of my dad, a wedding picture of my dad and a different woman.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. And it turns out that he was married before, and I guess, I don't know about the status of his divorce.
You can't be married to two people at the same time.
I don't know about the status of his divorce or whatever, but that probably might have had something to do with it. I don't know. I don't want to make anything up, but that's
interesting. I wonder how he ever got that sorted out.
I don't know. I never did meet that person or you know.
Yeah.
Anybody from that marriage.
Wow. Huh.
Yeah, interesting. Did you know that story?
No. I had no idea.
The things you find out.
So did they ever, like, I don't know. You probably don't know the answer. Like, were they ever legally married in the U.S.? Or can you transfer a marriage from Mexico?
I'm sure they were, because my mom, I'm not positive about my mom's citizenship and how she actually became naturalized, but there's a story about how she ended up, she was living in Haiti for 6 months waiting for her visa to go through.
Wow.
So I'm not sure if that happened before or after she married my dad.
Wow.
But I've always been curious, and I've always thought about doing an information, you know, freedom of information request for her. For her immigration.
All her documents.
Yeah, documents. And someday I need to do that.
Yeah.
Probably sooner than later.
I'd be interested to see all that.
Mm-hmm.
My cousin Kim on my dad's side is doing a lot of ancestry research right now. So she's been uncovering lots of documents and everything to do with Grandma Eddie. And she recently, I think, found out. So she knew that Grandma Eddie was in a family of five girls,
mm-hmm.
but she thinks she just found a birth certificate indicating that one of the girls was born a twin, but the other baby died at birth.
Oh.
So there was six girls. I think that's what she just found. But it's fascinating to look for documentation and then try to fill in the narrative surrounding those documents.
I know. Yeah, it's interesting how the untold stories.
Yeah.
So speaking of untold, we haven't mentioned your dad.
Yeah.
Tell me about your dad.
Your husband?
my deceased husband.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was born in 1946, January 22nd, in Santa Ana, California.
Yes, that's right.
But his family all came out from Minnesota. I'm trying to fill in what Cousin Kim has been telling me about when Grandma Eddie, his mom, came out, and his dad. I think his dad was in the Navy.
That's right.
The
Coast Guard.
In the Coast Guard. Oh, okay. They got married in San Diego.
Oh.
Grandma Eddie and
that's interesting.
Grandpa Robert.
Yes.
My dad's dad passed away, I think, when he was like 7.
Yeah,
he was pretty young.
He was young. I'm not sure if it was 7, 8, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
What was your dad's name?
Lynn James Steffens.
Because he was supposed to be Linda Jane. Did you know that?
Yes. His aunt who passed away in her early 20s, he was named after. But he went by Jim or Jimbo or Jimmy.com.
That's
He had more nicknames than most people.
That's right.
And yeah, he was the best.
I agree. He was awesome. Yeah. Yeah. I met him because I was living, renting a room from a single mom in Anaheim. And her name was Stephanie. And Stephanie graduated from Santa Ana High School the same year as Jim, 1964. And we were down at the beach in Balboa watching the sunset. And she said, "Hey, I've got a friend that I went to high school with from Santa Ana that lives down here now. Let's go check out and see if he's home." So we knocked on his door, and it was Jim. And his story is that he didn't tell me at that time, but later on I learned that he had just come back from Vancouver, Canada, where his fiancée had broken up with him.
Oh, my gosh.
And the funny thing is that her name was Lulu, also just like my mom. Did you know that story?
No.
Yeah.
I never heard that.
So that's a funny story. But yeah, that's what I found out after the fact. But I guess he lived right there on the peninsula across the street from Newport Elementary, where we ended up living for quite a long time and where we lived when you were born. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was a wonderful spot. We ended up getting married. Let's see, we met in November of 77 and got married in March 20th of 1978.
And first day of spring.
And I remember calling my mom and dad and saying, "Mom and Dad, we're married." And so that was quite a shock.
Can't do anything about it.
Yeah. We got married in Las Vegas with our friend Kenny Pyle as our witness. Kenny was a highlight player at the MGM there in Vegas, and I knew him from Miami. He was my best friend's cousin, my best friend Karen Basha from Miami, who I met when I was at Notre Dame High School.
Did you go to Vegas knowing you were going to get married?
No, we did not. We were... But no regrets. No regrets, yeah. But a lot of the young women I've mentored over the years, their moms always say, "Please, Ava, don't tell her about your story of how you got married. I don't want them to get any ideas." But yeah, your dad was one of a kind. And I could see... I remember thinking, this is someone I can see myself growing old with.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a wonderful, wonderful years together. We're married 36 years. He passed away November of 2014. It'll be 5 years this November. What's your favorite memory of him?
I don't know. There's too many. He was really fun.
Yep. You know, recently I was I was thinking, that's what I miss the most of not having Jim around is the laughter. There was always laughter, even when we were angry at each other, even when we yelled at each other, it would always end up in laughter when it was all said and done. We would always find something funny to laugh about, and he just really knew. He used to say there were so many Jimmy-isms, right? But one of them was, don't take anybody too seriously, least of all yourself. And I love that, and that's something, I'm so thankful for all his Jimmy-isms because they keep me going, and I share them with my staff now. I'm always sharing Jimmy-isms, but that's one that keeps me grounded and not taking myself too seriously, no matter what's going on in life. He was a funny guy.
Yeah.
And he had so many friends.
I feel like he was friends with all of my friends.
I know. I know.
All my memorial friends loved him.
His memorial service was such a it was a memorial to his capacity for friendship and the diversity of people in that room, generationally, demographically, in every way, ethnicities, language, economic status. Like, there was every kind of person, religion, everything, gender, everything. There were so many different kinds of people in that church. They packed it out, and when people spoke about him and got up and told stories, there were different languages spoken, different ages. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Really a testimony to the man that he was and continues to live on. His spirit continues to live on in us.
I feel like he lived by, like, a mantra that, like, there's no strangers, only friends he hasn't made yet.
Yes. So true.
And it always frustrated me because I feel like it's kind of like now with my daughter, knowing that it's going to take me double the amount of time to do anything. I feel like being with him was the same because whenever we went anywhere, he needed to make friends with everybody. And
That's
we couldn't
right.
leave until everybody in the room was his friend.
That's you know? Right. That's right. And we would walk in and meet somebody new and he would tell them our whole life story. And I'd be like, Jim, what makes you think that they care? But he would make a lifelong friend right there.
Yeah.
Every day, making lifelong friends.
Yep.
And I miss that a lot.
Yeah. He was very easy to, like, up for anything, mm-hmm. you know?
Unless he wasn't.
Unless it wasn't going to be fun. He was up for anything that was going to be fun.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. But you know what? He was also such a servant. It wasn't until he was gone that I realized all the things he took care of for me that he just did without even making a big fuss about. All, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's crazy. I can't even, all the stuff around the house, all the stuff around, you know, just. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, we probably have to wind this up, huh?
Yeah, we only have about a minute left. So I'm glad we had time to do this.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah.
It's delightful. Really fun.
There's probably 100 more questions we could ask each other.
I know. Thank you for sharing this time with me, for inviting me to talk with you about our lives and to remember some good times, some hard times, and some important people in our lives, especially, yeah, our family.
Yeah. Love you.
I love you too.